without further delay of Warbirds Radio, here is your MC tonight, Matt Jolly. Please welcome him.
Well, good evening, everybody. Thanks for being here tonight. We have a great night lined up for you tonight. Seriously, how many of you, just a show of hands here, are from England? Do we have any British contingent? Okay, great. Glad you were here. I hope you all got the questionnaire filled out, because we will have some question and answer afterwards. So this is going to be a lot of fun tonight. Let's bring out our first guest tonight. The way we do this at Theater in the Woods with aviators, you'll appreciate this. The person who sits next to me is often the hardest of hearing. And the guy that's here tonight who qualified for this is none other than Mr. Dave Hadfield. So let's bring him out. He's our RCAF contingent person here tonight. Dave, come on out here. You have a seat right there. Dave flies, just right there. Dave, he flies Kitty Hawks, Mustangs, Spitfires, a whole variety of aircraft, and he's going to kind of do a compare and contrast tonight for us. Next up, I believe, is none other than our RAF representative tonight, Group Captain Steve Richards from Leeds, Yorkshire, is here tonight. He's in D.C. Where is he? Come on out here, Group Captain Richards. Thank you. Can I level with you? This next guy is a friend of mine, and he called me up, and he was like, very, very polite, "What is the dress code for Theater in the Woods?" I said, "Well, Steve, it's Freddie Mercury night. Everybody's going to wear short shorts and big mustaches." And there's this pause in his voice, and he says, "Well, okay." So please welcome Stephen Bridgewater, ladies and gentlemen, the special projects editor from Key Publishing, who wore his short pants tonight. Very happy to have him here with us tonight. And I don't know where he is. Somewhere out there, hopefully, is Kermit Weeks, who will be joining us a little bit later on tonight once he gets the snipe tucked away. I don't know where. I've heard rumor he might show up, so we'll see. Is that Kermit right there? Here he is. Kermit Weeks, everybody.
What's happening?
Hey, I heard... No one here is going to believe this, but I heard a British aeroplane broke down tonight. Is that true?
Well, we brought a Snipe and a Pup. They were British. And we brought an Albatross and a Fokker D7 that were German. And anyway, the Snipe, I was supposed to be flying literally right now, and I put 6.5 hours on it in the last couple of weeks. We went to fill it, and we had a fuel tank leak. So I don't know, maybe... I think the Germans didn't win because they were broken before we got here. So we're going to call it even.
Well, tonight we're celebrating 100 years of the RAF, and also the end of World War I, the century mark. And I wanted to ask our historian here, Stephen Bridgewater, who has authored a number of books, the previous editor of Aeroplane and also of Jets. And I wanted to ask Steve, really, what caused the RAF to be formed? And in private, he said, well, because the Navy had aeroplanes, and then they had to do something about that. But, Stephen, give us the real answer tonight on why the RAF came about, and from your historical perspective.
Well, you're half right, Matt. The Navy did have aeroplanes, but it was really a standardization. For the early years of the war, the Royal Flying Corps had been flying aeroplanes, the Royal Navy Air Service had been flying aeroplanes, and it was really a standardization that was decided to bring it through under one umbrella, so that everything could be regulated, training could be standardized, improve safety and efficiency, and of course, work on tactics. So April 1st, 1918 was when the Royal Air Force formally came into being. And it was people like Hugh Trenchard who gave the tactics and actually learned how to fight aeroplanes as a collective unit. So that's really where the RAF came into being.
A lovely answer, Stephen. Kermit, you've flown most of these early RAF aircraft. I mean, you've flown all over the world. Even at Peter Jackson's collection, you've flown a number of these. What's your impression? Give us a sort of a historical impression of these aircraft.
Well, so far I've flown the Snipe, the Pup, and an SE-5 with original engines, you know, so I don't really count the modern kind of lookalikes with the things. And, you know, the Pup was kind of their first fighter that had the synchronization to shoot the machine gun through the propeller. That thing is the sweetest flying airplane. It's got an 80-horsepower roan. I'm actually going to run it out here in the vintage review, I think, on Wednesday.
And it just flies like a butterfly. I love that airplane. The Snipe, I've got the early version during the war, and it's got very heavy ailerons, which they later corrected with some aerodynamic balances. And it is very wallowy in the yaw, and they later put a bigger vertical fin on it and stuff. I used to have the Waldo Pepper airplanes, so I've flown the Sopwith Camel with a Warner, but I can't really compare them because it didn't have a rotary. And the SC-5 was a dream to fly. It's a, I flew the Peter Jackson ones down there with a ISO in. Patrick Lindsay used to own.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's a very, it flies like a really modern airplane, that would be a really great airplane, so. But they're all fun.
I want to dig a little deeper in this, and I don't mind getting a little philosophic here, but if you walk a mile in a man's shoes, you often understand a little bit more about that man. Now that you have walked in the shoes of these pioneers, these true warriors, what do you think of them, Kermit, after flying these airplanes?
Well, you have to realize, today we look back and we look how crude, but that was the cutting edge of technology back then. You know, the reason the airplanes came around in the first place is because the slow-moving armies used to use the cavalry as the eyes of the army, and when they bogged down into trench warfare, they lost that ability. What was the horse guy going to do? So the cavalry literally went to the skies to spy on what the enemy was doing behind the lines. And originally it was all reconnaissance airplanes, and eventually everybody got the idea that, hey, if we knock down the enemy's eyes, we're going to have a better chance. So that's when the fighter pilot airplanes came into being. And, in wartime, it's basically like this, and they would leapfrog themselves and each side in different technologies. Just taking pot shots to trying to shoot something through with deflectors on the blades, but nobody would want to fly formation with you. And then eventually they came up with a synchronization. The Germans basically used a mechanical synchronization, which basically, there's just basically a cam anywhere the prop shows up. And as it's spinning around, the machine gun fires at its normal rate. But if a propeller's in the way, the cam just holds the firing pin back, so the machine gun doesn't fire at a consistent rate. It'll skip a beat every once in a while. And the British came along and improved the German deal. The German ones was mechanical, and the British ones came along and actually used the hydraulic deal, so the hydraulic pulse, so they could route the cable around to the guns, so it was a little bit better deal. But they went from one gun to two guns to everybody was trying to one-up everybody.
Well, it was an interesting time, and as you brought that up, a lot of folks that fly these airplanes, we think of them, by modern standards, as rather underpowered box kites, but these were not. This was a lot of horsepower in a small airframe, wasn't it?
Well, the one thing you need to realize is the engines that were the original engines were very high-torque, low-RPM engines, okay? And you can get horsepower either with, a lot of power or RPM. And it's the difference between a Harley motorcycle that's got that low-end torque sound at a low RPM compared to like a Kawasaki that sounds like a sewing machine. And so if you take like the Sopwith Pup sitting out there has an 80 horsepower Lerone in it. Well, look at the prop on that thing. It's because it's getting 80 horsepower at 1,200 RPM. And if you put 160 horsepower modern engine in, as an example, like the Fokker D7 out there originally would have had 160 horsepower Mercedes. It flew great. You put a 200 horsepower Ranger in there that's instead of, 1400 RPM and it's running at 2300 RPM, it won't fly its way out of a wet paper bag because you don't have the thrust at that speed range.
Certainly.
So
we're going to get to Dave here in just a moment, who has flown a number of the World War II airplanes, but I want to bring in Group Captain Richards here. The importance of this anniversary to you, can you comment a little bit on this? And then we'll talk about some World War II stuff. But 100 years of aviation there for the Royal Air Force. Talk about the significance of this anniversary and where we are today.
Sure. Well, every anniversary, every birthday is important, but clearly reaching 100 years is pretty special. And 100 years of air power is something to really celebrate. We talk about technology and just a moment ago. Air power is always on the cutting edge of technology, always has been and always will be. So to look back over those 100 years and see where we've come from wooden string to the fifth generation fighter jets that we have now is amazing. I see you've got my hands in the air already. You caught me out there.
Yeah. Well, we'll explain what Kermit's doing here in just a moment.
And
we'll get a better one. Hang on a minute, Kermit, with that. We're going to do a good one tonight. Go ahead, though.
But I think, you know, the Royal Air Force is in the consciousness of Great Britain. We talked about where it came from in 1918. And it was public outcry that actually pushed Britain into forming a Royal Air Force after London was bombed during the First World War, and it's the first time that that kind of thing had happened, and suddenly the civilians were on the front line, and it was no longer a far-off battlefield that you got letters about, you know, and the sad news that your family member had been killed. It was now right in your, literally, your backyard, garden, as we would say. And so there was public outcry that generated the desire. And so the Air Force is in the public conscience and has been right the way through to the Second World War and the sacrifices made there. So it means a lot to the country to see the Air Force come to 100 years.
That's well said. And, of course, Group Captain Stevens here is the assistant air attaché at the British Embassy there in Washington, D.C. So he was our official Royal Air Force contingent tonight, and we're very honored to have you here. So thank you for coming, sir.
It's a tough job. Someone has to do it.
Well, hey. You sip a lot of champagne in nicer places than this, so thank you for being here with us.